Welcome to this week's edition of Community Tides. I'm Chris Bricker, and on alternate Fridays during the noon hour, I join my co-host, Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of Jefferson Community Foundation, to explore new developments and new paradigms, along with the challenges and solutions that accompany an evolving community. Hi, Siobhan.
Hi, Chris. Great to be with you.
As always. It's hard these days not to become engaged in conversations about housing density and affordability. These days, more than ever, there needs to be transparent, solutions-oriented dialogue. And as the University of North Carolina Charlotte Urban Institute has pointed out, there's been a noticeable shift in the debate about density. It's no longer a classic confrontation between progressive planning concepts versus NIMBY-inspired resistance, as much as competing viewpoints about the role density plays in such issues as equity, affordable housing, and how to control the forces of gentrification and displacement. We have three special guests today. Jayasri Lingappa is Professor Emeritus in the Department of Global Health at University of Washington in Seattle, having recently retired after 22 years of research and teaching. While living in the Capitol Hill neighborhood in Seattle, she helped to start a community group that was concerned with the consequences of a major upzone that began there in 2010. She moved from Seattle to Port Townsend 5 years ago and is a volunteer with Habitat for Humanity, East Jefferson County, and Housing Solutions Network. Emma Bolin came on board as the City of Port Townsend's Director of Planning and Community Development earlier this summer. Before, she was the interim director and manager of community and economic development for the city of Port Angeles. Rewind further, and she was a Jefferson County planner on Castle Hill, amongst many other things, on the Olympic Peninsula. Liz Revord is the newest director of Housing Solutions Network, a group of community changemakers addressing the need to increase and protect affordable workforce housing here in Jefferson County. Liz and her husband, Willie, are renters with high hopes of affording their first home right here in Port Townsend someday. All three of you, welcome to Community Tides.
Thanks so much, Chris. Thanks for Sean for having us. Excited to be here today.
We're so grateful that you're spending your time with us this morning. And Emma, I thought maybe we could start out with just a broad view of density, what that phrase means through a city planning lens, and specifically how it relates to the affordable housing conversation in our community.
I like to think about density as the capacity of our land to efficiently house the community. So you can trace a three-dimensional outline of a detached single-family home and fit within that same volume many different types of housing. Housing like accessory dwelling units, or also known as a granny flat, a duplex, a quadplex, a triplex, stacked flat units, and cottage apartments. There's many different flavors of this type of housing. In fact, we call it middle housing because these types of units are traditionally less expensive than a detached single family home to rent or to own. And they launch many into first time home buyer opportunities. They're also middle because they blend in fantastically with the aesthetics of an existing detached single family neighborhood. And they allow incremental additions to the neighborhood capacity and also community prosperity. So it's a model that many of our American cities were planned for until about World War II and thereafter when we had the proliferation of suburbs. So our best examples in American cities, and especially our Washington cities, are pre-World War II vintage.
Emma, is this a conversation that's happening right now in the city about density and how we might move forward as a community? I know there's so many people moving here.
Yeah, there's so many people moving here. And I would say, you know, it's a conversation that's happening statewide. And in fact, the Department of Commerce, which gives technical assistance and support to cities like Port Townsend in implementing the state's Growth Management Act, have hired or are hoping to hire more planning staff to help communities like ours with these housing capacity challenges. So it's a conversation that we're having in the community, and we're going to keep having I would say, for the next 2 years, because we're going to be gearing up for our 2025 comprehensive plan periodic update.
So for all three of you, and you can decide who wants to go first, you know, the opportunities in Port Townsend for affordable housing, what's that all about? Would having increased density in Port Townsend be an asset to affordable housing?
I'll be happy to jump right into this one, Chris. Thanks so much for that question. Honestly, yes. I mean, I think it really comes down to infrastructure and services. So when we talk about Port Townsend, we already have a sewer. We have transportation. We have schools and grocery stores and hospitals, all within a very condensed area. And so this is also where the brunt of the jobs are. You know, as my role of Director of Housing Solutions Network, we are really focused on affordable workforce housing. So we need the people to live by the jobs. We can also look at this if we want to consider the opportunity for reducing our carbon footprint and long-term environmental impacts. When we increase density within the city limits, this makes sense to our community as we stand on our ethics, you know, points. We moved to this area. I'm guessing I'll use the royal we in this scenario. For the environment, for the water, the mountains, the rivers, the trees, all of it. So, which is why when we talk about increasing density, we have to get it right the first time, and we have to do it to impact the community that lives and thrives here.
Jayshree, what kind of conversations are you hearing about this, about the whole idea of density and the pros and cons? As I mentioned in my opening remark there, that the conversation is sort of turning in unexpected ways just because of the nature of the community and how people are looking at this pristine, beautiful environment and the whole idea of density and what's going to happen and the market rate.
So from my perspective, there's what I'm hearing a lot from Port Townsend leaders is a simplistic notion that if you simply increase housing supply, you'll eventually satisfy the demand. So there, the idea is just keep building until you bring prices into the affordable range, even if that means building thousands of units in Port Townsend all at market rate. So that's kind of a simple supply and demand notion that also can be referred to as a trickle-down idea of market rate housing. And I would just point out, there's a lot of problems with this notion, and I'll give you a couple. In a place like Port Townsend, there's actually two kinds of demand for housing. So there's the demand of the well-to-do and wealthy, and the demand for housing by the local workforce, which spans a whole spectrum from low-wage earners all the way through the middle class. And right now, the demand for housing here from the wealthy is huge. It's been made worse by wealth inequality, by the global nature of markets, and by the changing interests in terms of housing during the pandemic. So the wealthy in that kind of environment will outcompete the middle class with its buying power. And in this area, they often buy houses with all cash offers. So our town has become an incredibly desirable place for the wealthy. It's peaceful, it's beautiful, it's culturally vibrant. So it's a huge attraction to wealthy retirees, people who want second and third homes in beautiful locations, wealthy climate migrants, remote workers, and people seeking to buy houses as an investment. So, and I would just add one more point, and that is that builders make more money by building for the wealthy. So you can just think about it as if they're going to make a 15% flat profit, what would they rather build, you know, a $300,000 housing unit on a piece of land or a $600,000 housing unit on that same piece of land? They'll make more money from the higher end unit. So if you just leave market forces to do what they want to do with no restrictions, the market will produce a lot of high-end housing units out in a community like this. Not every community, but in a community like this where there is so much demand from the wealthy who can afford second homes and investment properties. So that's my biggest concern with what's going on in this community.
Thank you. I find your experience in Seattle so valuable to us as we consider this early stage of this conversation here in Port Townsend. And Emma, I would like to hear how, if the city's conversation has gotten to the point of looking at some of the issues that Jayshree raised, And if either you or Liz know of other communities that have navigated these issues well, and some of the things that we should all be kind of researching and educating ourselves on. Emma, why don't you go ahead and address that first?
I would say it's actually really fortunate that I just participated in a middle housing webinar by the Municipal Resource Services Center, which featured Kirkland, City of Olympia, Bellingham, Wenatchee, as examples of how they've implemented middle housing code in order to gas pedal development. You know, traditionally people try to use moratoria, let's not build anything, to try and get what we want. And that hasn't really had an effect on the housing market. And we don't want an imbalance of housing types that results in a greater proportion of product than the market needs. We want to encourage a broad range of types, configurations, and price points. So by adding this middle housing, it helps to slow price increases by increasing supply. So we're talking like adding a lot of production for townhomes or multiplexes. And market rate housing also, it can have a really good part that it plays in terms of being a demonstration project for private developers to secure financing, to show lenders that our rural peninsula is a place where multi-story platform building can pencil out. And so I know that, you know, in Port Angeles, where I just came from, that there is a market rate condo project that's going to hopefully do just that. The multi-story, multi-family projects can work here. Evans Vista is our project geared towards neighborhood workforce priced housing in the city of Port Townsend. And hopefully that's going to do the same. And over time, there's turnover rates, depreciation, and deterioration of housing stock causes down renting. But as a government entity, it's our job to remove as many barriers as possible and find that gas pedal, since historically restrictive zoning policy is part of the cause of America's housing shortage. And discouraging market rate housing, it shortchanges our future affordable housing stock. But at the same time, we have to find a way to insert those middle housing types and increase the supply.
Let's talk about market rate a little bit, folks. What does that really mean? I've heard realtors rationalize huge sales by saying that's what the market is telling us. What happens?
Yeah, you're just hitting exactly what I'm hoping to say, right on the nose. So that's my question to you all is, like, I ask you all to define what market rate housing is in Jefferson County. Tell me the numbers that you think the market rate is, and tell me the numbers that you think our local workforce or area median income can actually afford. We have a little wheel at our HSN outreach events. We have all these like little questions on it. And it's always so interesting to me to see people's faces once they see the answers to the questions on the wheels. And that looks like, what is the local AMI? What is the going rate for housing? And so I'm going to spew a few numbers at you. I apologize for a data drop, but here we go. In June of 2022, according to a market rate report by a local Windermere agent, the median home price for a house for sale in Port Townsend was $768,000. I'll say that again. June 22nd, average home sale, $768,000. In Jefferson County, that was $700,000. According to the 2020 U.S. Census, the local area median income can afford up to $300,000 if they have no other debt. That also doesn't take into account for the local or the current 6.5% interest rates that are happening. So who are you building market rate homes for? And my argument would be not for the workforce, or at least not for the majority of the workforce. You're seeing such a disconnect between what locals can afford to buy and what the market rate housing currently is. And I would argue, I think that I heard Emma say this, and I've heard this in passing before, but the deterioration of housing inventory cannot be a legit offering to people. We can't wait until houses are falling apart that become unsafe and uninhabitable for that to be considered affordable housing. When you look at the history of houses that have been sold in the last 3 years that are under $300,000, this is just my own personal concept here. I'm guessing that the majority of those probably need to be bulldozed or are unsafe homes to begin with. There's not a lot of quality inventory that we have seen up for sale along that price range in the last 3 years.
Those numbers are really helpful and gives me a framework. So 300,000 for workforce is affordable, 700 something is where we're at. I'm curious, Emma, when you all talk about Evans Vista being for working people, what range are you talking about?
My numbers might be off. I don't have them right in front of me, but it's about, I think, 30 to 50 units that are going to be affordable. So that means 30% of area median income. And then I believe it's going to be 100 or so of workforce housing, which is 80 to 120% of area median income.
Thanks. Jayshree, did you have a comment?
Oh, I just want to make a comment that, smaller market rate units are not necessarily more affordable. So there were a couple one bedroom condos in Port Townsend that sold this year for over $450,000 for an 800 square foot one bedroom condo. And that's, as Liz just said, up to 300,000 would be affordable for someone at area median income, 100% of area median income. So even a tiny 800 square foot one bedroom condo is too expensive for someone at area median income. And so if you just let a lot of market rate units that are small get built in Port Townsend, I don't see how that connects to affordability. Those could easily be, like Liz was pointing out, well over what workforce household could afford.
So that's a good point. I'm wondering about ongoing development beyond Evans Vista. Is there part of this conversation, Emma, about ensuring that a certain percentage of development is going to be within those affordable area median income percentages? Is that part of what's being discussed?
It's certainly something that's being discussed. And there's pros and cons to trying to control the market from the government's perspective. One is deed restrictions are, really challenging to enforce and require some staff. And the second is that inclusionary zoning in 2016, the city had a housing assessment that said that inclusionary housing would not work. And I was just reading George Mason University Urban Planning Center had an article that talked about how inclusionary zoning has the opposite effect. And I should define inclusionary housing as where a government requires a certain percentage of units in, private development to be rented or sold at, the affordable price point. And what ends up happening sometimes is that to compensate, the developer raises rents on units that they can, and it has a regional effect on raising rent. So inclusionary zoning hasn't really been seen as the answer, and deed restrictions have been really challenging from a small city to implement. As far as unit depreciation and turnover, one of the things is, of course, having safe places to live, but things get older, their condition is average. And so the pricing for those units, certainly falls over time and can be a way to launch somebody into that first time home buyer opportunity.
I misspoke just a few minutes ago and I wanted to correct myself. So I said that the peak of the housing market in June 2022 was 768,000. That is incorrect. It was 752,000, according to the report that I've received from Windermere. So I'm a few thousand dollars off, but as we see, it's still a significant amount of money. I just wanted to make sure that I'm providing the correct information.
It's still over seven.
In Port Townsend.
Port Townsend. Yeah.
Right. And I'll even continue that thought process and say that the regional cash, Jayshree mentioned this earlier, the regional cash transactions for the area have fallen significantly. So before, all cash offers were about 50% or and above on these home transactions. And now they're down to about 20 to 30%. So we're still seeing significant cash offerings.
And I would just add to that, all it takes is one all cash offer to outbid someone who's in the local workforce, right? Who is, and just keep in mind, people in the local workforce don't have even $300,000 in cash just sitting around, right? So they are totally dependent on mortgages and loans. And as a seller, there's a whole lot less risk if you can just get a bundle of cash. And that's what is going on, whether it's 20% cash offers or 50% cash offers. All you need is one as a seller, and you're going to go for that rather than the local workforce person who needs a mortgage loan.
Especially if there's no contingencies and no inspections.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really problematic to me. I want to know from each of you, what kinds of conversations are you hearing? How are these conversations among the community themselves changing based on, you know, the old idea of progressive attitudes towards housing and affordable housing and all the rest of that? What's changing in terms of this population that's living here now that is so, I'm not going to say divided, but it's just so different in income levels and ability to be able to even walk down the street and tell somebody that, hey, I wash dishes at the local restaurant, or I wait on tables someplace, or I'm in the bank, or I work at Jefferson Healthcare, and, and I have a house here. I'm your neighbor.
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. These are the conversations that, you know, HSN is in every day. I mean, tell me a conversation that you haven't had in the last 2 weeks that the very foundation of that conversation didn't revolve around housing. You know, as we talk about what HSN's role historically has been educating the homeowners about what the housing crisis is. The people who are housing insecure, they understand. They get it. They see it. They're living it. They have living experience of it. But now we're seeing that people across our community have now been affected by the lack of services. So you see cafes with shortened hours. You see the need to go out of our community for your local dentist, for an x-ray, for an MRI, because the hospital, the number one reason why they cannot retain employees is for lack of affordable housing. And so when people are affected on a personal level, that's when they get it. That's where they're really seeing the impact. You know, the conversations I have with my neighbors, with my friends, it all comes back down to housing. And, you know, I think that it's only going to get worse before it gets better. And so we really have to be open and honest about what the reality is in our community. And it's going to take community-based solutions to help alleviate some of this pressure. And I think that's the role that HSN plays in this community. But I'll also open up the floor to anybody else having these conversations as well.
Well, J3 and Emma, what kind of nuanced conversations are you hearing these days now? You both have two different perspectives, one as a planner and one as an advocate, and having some experience in Seattle with some of the changes that we maybe are on the verge of seeing, but haven't quite seen them yet.
Yeah, and if I could answer just from the Seattle perspective, Seattle is a great example of a place that has been in basically a decade-long orgy of building market rate units, many of which were townhouses and duplexes and triplexes and quads. And prices have not become more affordable in Seattle. And that's largely because more people are moving there. So in the case of Seattle, more people are moving there for jobs, and they're well-to-do people with high-paying jobs. In our community, it's well-to-do people moving here for leisure, for investment, for second and third homes. So I think the thing we're going to start hearing, the change that's going to happen, is we're going to start hearing more people in this community ask, what is the city doing to ensure and protect affordability for the local workforce, including the middle-class workforce, right? Not just, you know, up to 100 or 120% of AMI, but even higher than that, right? I think people with 200% or 300% of the area median income are struggling to compete with the influx of the wealthy, which is only going to increase with climate change and wealth inequality. So I think that's where the conversation is going to go, is what is the city doing to protect and ensure affordability?
And then Emma, from your perch as a planner, do you have the honor of putting a cap on all of this before we sign off?
Well, I would say that, you know, what is the city's role? And, you know, we provide infrastructure, incentives, grants, and we try to ensure that we get that variety of the housing types and the densities, and we try to remove the barriers. We know that there is a lot of that barrier removal work that needs to be done in 2023. In fact, we mapped out a housing policy map. You know, in my near term, what I can say is that we need to streamline permitting. That's something I can do today as a newcomer. But in the meantime, you know, we know that we need capacity. We can have as much vision as we want, but if we actually want to gas pedal getting units in the pipeline, which is what HUD would like us to see for affordability, is getting units in the pipeline. I would say that we want to get units in the pipeline for all price points and types so that we have the most diverse housing stock possible. So the next step is actually mapping out how we're going to get that work done. So we hope that we get a long-range planner as part of our 2023 budget who can actually do that work, working with me and our community and what that vision actually looks like and get the work done. And then, of course, we need to continue the community conversation. Middle housing can be really contentious because it adds density, adds capacity. And there's a way to do it so that, you know, it increases the aesthetics and the privacy and all the things that we really value about Port Townsend. And so that will be a critical piece, is to continue having these conversations and engagement on design. And nothing's a silver bullet. We do have the Evans Vista request for qualification for a master plan that we're going to be publishing tomorrow. And I'm really excited. The county has agreed to provide $500,000 for that work to be done. At the same time, when I read the classified section of any newspaper where I travel, I see the same RFQs with the same funding, usually COVID ARPA funds, where communities are struggling with the same issues. And so we have to be patient, but also tactical with our timing and our resources and with each other in the community so we can figure out what actually makes sense here. You know, pushing through a 200-page code, you know, can lead to a lot of confusion. So how do we chunk it out and make sure that the end product is usable, livable, and ensures that we thrive as a community?
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but we want all three of you back for further conversation at a later date. But thank you so much for being here today. Emma Bolin just came on board as the City of Port Townsend's Director of Planning and Community Development. Jesse Lengapa, Professor Emeritus of Department of Global Health at the University of Washington in Seattle. And Liz Revord, the newest Director of Housing Solutions Network. Thanks all three of you for joining Siobhan and I on Community Tides today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you so much, Siobhan and Chris and Liz and Jaytree.
I second Chris's notion of having you back sometime soon to continue the conversation. It's a really good one. Really appreciate your time.
I love it. The more we can educate our community on these needs, the better the turnout's going to be, right? I think that's a goal we can all get behind.
Totally.